The Oracle Network.
Hi, my name is Jules, and I'm the host of Riddle Me That True Crime, which focuses on unsolved murders and disappearances, where I often do so with the help of family members, where they come on and tell their stories, and oftentimes with experts. I'll usually present the story over a multi-episode story arc. Sometimes I'll do one-off episodes like one I covered recently, which was the tragic and very suspicious death of 14-year-old Noah Donahoe in Belfast, Northern Ireland. So Noah went off on his bike one day. It was Father's Day, the 21st of June, 2020, amidst lockdown. He rides his bike, he's going to Cave Hill Park to meet friends, and something along the route causes him to get derailed. He ends up in an area that he's unfamiliar with and has no business being in, given that he is a Catholic schoolboy and this is a loyalist area. So it takes just under a week until Noah's body is discovered. He's discovered unclothed in a storm drain, and the PSNI comes out with a preliminary conclusion of accident. Mind you, this is before an autopsy has been done to determine manner of death or cause of death, and also before the forensics has been run. The family is screaming out for justice. I really hope you will join me on Riddle Me That True Crime, which you can listen to anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, 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 Rainbow Warriors. This is my disclaimer. Beyond the Rainbow is a true crime podcast. It's not suitable for young children, and maybe not even for some adults. I tend to swear like a sailor, and I'm kind of proud of that. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, Rainbow Warriors. I'm CJ, and this is an October minisode. A minisode is a little different than a full episode. For one, it's shorter. For two, it will include a missing but not forgotten segment and a crime quickie segment only. And for three, I'm going to be the Rainbow Warrior reporter doing the missing but not forgotten LGBTQ plus member segment. In November, we'll get back to our other Rainbow Warrior reporters. But for the month of October, since these are minisodes, I'm just going to go ahead and do them. You can get a hold of me on the socials, almost everywhere at Rainbow Crimes. Please check out my website at beyondtherainbowpodcast.com. There you can see a very long list of missing but not forgotten LGBTQ plus members. This minisode's missing person is Jonathan Howard. Jonathan went missing from Elkton, Maryland on October 25th, 2014. On that day, he was last seen around 4 p.m. at a motel, a Motel 6. Jonathan was unhoused at the time he went missing. He'd sleep in his car or couch surf with friends, or he'd stay with his friends at the Motel 6. He was 43 years old at the time of his disappearance, making him 50 should he be found alive today. Jonathan's a smaller guy, between 4 feet and 4 feet 3 inches. He weighs 110 to 115 pounds. He has brown eyes and brown hair. He commonly wears a baseball cap. Jonathan also has a scar on his lip from cleft palate surgery. Jonathan's car that he sometimes sleeps in is a 2012 silver Hyundai. It's a Velostar with Alabama license plates. His vehicle was found about 3 weeks after he disappeared in Newark, Delaware. Jonathan owned a dog grooming business in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. His mom has been running the business since Jonathan moved to Elkton, Massachusetts. That was the start of 2013. This was only supposed to be a temporary move. Jonathan had told his mom he wanted to do some traveling and some living while he was still young enough to do so, so she said she'd watch over his business until he got back. Police don't suspect foul play, but it's been, what, 7 years? He walked away from his car? Should anyone have any leads, please call the Elkton Police Department at area code 410-398-4200. This minisode's crime quickie comes to us from Toronto, Canada. Grace Elizabeth Baxter. She was assigned male at birth in 1965. Growing up was not a very happy experience in a body that felt foreign to her. But 20 years later, in 1985, Grace was able to travel to the United States for gender reassignment surgery. This was something Grace had longed for. Unlike a lot of parents of trans people who abandon their child, Grace's parents were 100% supportive. They knew the struggles Grace had endured, especially in her teenage years. In fact, they were so on board with Grace's transition, they helped her make the surgery appointment happen. Grace came out of the surgery and physical healing process a happy, vibrant young woman. In 1988, Grace moved from her childhood community in British Columbia to Toronto. She was ultimately hoping to find a job working with computers. But not able to pull down a good job and make the kind of money she'd need to stay in Toronto, Grace turned to sex work. She became Candace, a dominatrix. She quickly filled up her roster with over 100 clients. And always having safety on her mind, Grace was sure to keep a can of mace and a stun gun near her when she worked. She was making bank. She afforded herself a beautiful lakefront condo, and she filled it with one of her passions, fine antiques. She bought herself a BMW, and she filled up her closet with designer clothing, not wanting to be a disappointment to her parents who always had her back. She fibbed to them, and she told them she was an executive with a computer company. In December of 1992, Grace sent her parents an early Christmas present. She mailed them 2 airline tickets to fly out and stay with her in Toronto during Christmas time. On December 7th, Grace, who was now 27 years old, and another sex worker worked a stag party. They both stayed until a little bit after midnight. Around 2 a.m., Grace received a phone call. The call was in reference to a business ad she had placed in a newspaper called Now Weekly. Grace and the caller agreed to a 45-minute sexual session. The encounter would take place at his apartment, and the price would be $200. She arrived around 4 a.m. During the entire session, the caller struggled with his hard-on. The caller was a 23-year-old man named Patrick Daniel Johnson. He was a weightlifter and a guard at the Don Jail in Toronto. When Patrick couldn't get an erection, he raged. A scared Grace tried to protect herself, and she sprayed mace at Patrick's face. But the substance did little to control him. It only seemed to fuel his anger intensity. He knocked the mace from her hand and he pushed her to the ground. Patrick then jumped on Grace and he strangled her. I do wonder if he was on steroids. After she was dead, he cut her body into pieces using a hacksaw. He then disposed of her body pieces into garbage bags. He tied the bags off, and he placed them in different dumpsters around his apartment complex. Grace's body parts have never been found. Despite months spent scouring the Pickering Hill landfill, Toronto police could never find any trace of her. On the 18th of December, Grace, who loved to throw elegant parties at her condo, had a Christmas party planned this day. But where was the hostess? Her parents were alerted to her disappearance by friends, and they flew to Toronto ahead of schedule to help look for Grace. 11 days after her murder, Patrick was pawning Grace's diamond ring and Rolex watch. At a pawn shop, he received a little over $1,600 for the 2 items. Police got wind of this transaction, and they were able to trace Patrick by his phone records, which incidentally also put him with Grace in the early morning of December 8th. In January 1993, just days before Patrick was arrested, he wrote a 6-page handwritten letter to the Toronto Sun newspaper. In it, he claimed he was this big, tough weightlifter. He was a womanizer, a joker. He made a point to ask the newspaper to make sure the guys he worked with at the jail knew, I didn't know she was a he, so quit with the jokes. Not an I'm sorry I'm such an asshole, or an I'm sorry to Grace's parents. Just a I didn't know she was a he. Patrick was too concerned with his macho image. Around 4 weeks after Grace's murder, Patrick was getting ready to move back to British Columbia, where, like Grace, he apparently was from as well. The night before his goodbye party, police paid him a visit. Patrick told the police, "You might as well arrest me now. You know I did it. It's been a living hell for a month. It was an accident. I didn't mean to do it. It just went too far." Seeing that there wasn't a body of Grace, I was a little surprised that Patrick confessed. Patrick was initially charged with first-degree murder, but on the eve of his trial, he pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. The sentence for second-degree murder, which Patrick was found guilty of, was an automatic life sentence. He was given a very generous parole eligibility. It allowed him to apply for full release after 10 years served. After he had served only 9 years in prison, Patrick was given daytime parole as long as he promised to have no contact with sex workers. This is probably one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of. Giving a violent murderer day parole? What the fuck? As you probably imagined, warriors, Patrick couldn't help himself, and he was caught with a sex worker. His day parole was taken from him. 2 years later, in 2004, he was given another chance for day parole, with the same rules. He was busted by a cop who watched a sex worker get into a car Patrick was driving. Oh my God. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Come on, Canada's justice system. In 2010, Patrick was released from prison. That lasted 2.5 years, until an ex-girlfriend reported Patrick for alcohol abuse and hitting up sex workers. In 2014, Patrick claims to have found Indigenous spiritualism. He was released again. I haven't been able to see where he's had to go back to prison, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if he's back in prison now, or if he's been back and forth since 2014. I don't see any of this as unicorn justice for his rainbow crime of murdering Grace Baxter. He served only 9 years for taking 26-year-old Grace Baxter's life. The other years were for soliciting sex workers. That's not much time served for the crime he committed against Grace. And based on his behavior for time spent out of prison, Patrick saw no reform there in prison either. Rest in power, Grace. Love you, Rainbow Warriors. Remember, it's not a crime to be gay or trans or bi or asexual or whatever your truth is. Unless you're a murderer.